There's been so many occasions where all of the logic is saying, no, don't go that way. And everybody thinks you're mad, but as it works out, it was the right call.
I'm here today with Adrian Knight. He is the owner and founder of Six Figure Turnaround, an expert in buying and selling businesses.
I truly, wholeheartedly believe that when things on the surface go wrong, there's actually a bigger opportunity in there, and the trick is to look for that opportunity and then to turn it to your advantage. I always say that for most people, the best thing they can actually do for themselves is to start and create some space. Most people's lives are wake up straight out of bed, on the phone, into work mode, into mum or dad mode, and just by creating a little bit of space, you can then start to be like, okay, if I'm going to do this half marathon, then I should be running 3 times a week, as an example. And this is how I want to do it.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Adrian Knight. What's going on, brother? I'm excited for this conversation with you.
Likewise, Ben. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
You were just in Sparta?
Yeah, I've just come back from Sparta, Greece, last week, actually. Yeah.
Tell us, just get us up to date. Why were you there? How'd it go?
There's an obstacle race called Spartan Races. They're global, and I was at the World Championships in Sparta, Greece, which I just like precursor. I didn't come first or anything like that, but I wasn't there for that. I was there because it was doing a Spartan race in Sparta, Greece, and it didn't disappoint. It was an amazing experience, truly amazing.
Yeah, and I brought that up because we bantered about it prior, and that's one of the things that inspire me. I'm going to give your bio, but you do truly inspire me, your hard work, your grit. Adrian, guys, for anyone who doesn't know Adrian Knight yet, he is the owner and founder of Six Figure Turnaround, an expert in buying and selling businesses. He also guides others in business acquisition and growth. In addition to that, he has built a multi-million-dollar children's education group, and he's one of my go-to inspirations for practical tips, like on topics like exercise, nutrition, habits, mindset, and challenging yourself. Like you said, you know, you're not doing it to be the winner. You're doing it for the process and the challenge. Yeah, man, I'm excited to learn from you today. This is going to be fun. Is there anything we missed in that quick bio?
Not really. I mean, the Spartan race, I'm not necessarily an obstacle course racer per se. I'm really into fairly extreme endurance events. So in March is in the Arctic Circle. Next year I'm in Panama. So it's quite varied. I just happened to be doing the obstacle racing in Sparta. So it was a nice experience.
So you obviously didn't roll out of bed and say, oh, I'm going to go to the Arctic Solar to Sparta. I'm going to buy and sell businesses. Like, you've achieved a lot, and it's great to see you at the top of a mountain that, honestly, you're probably going to get to higher mountains as far as I'm concerned. It's great to see you at the top, but let's talk about how you got there. When you were a little kid, did you imagine this is what you were? What did you want to be when you grew up? What did you think you would be doing at this time?
You know what? I didn't know, like a lot of kids, I didn't know what I was going to do. But the one thing I did know with complete certainty was that I didn't want to work in an office. I didn't want a 9-to-5. I just knew that wasn't me, even though I didn't have the language for that. I could just, like, my language was, I'm not going to do what my dad does, and nothing wrong, you know, with that. But I just, it wasn't the lifestyle I wanted. And I knew that at a very young age. But it was when I was around 13, that was when the more entrepreneurial side of me started to emerge. So I'm a bit of a petrol head, if I'm honest. I love my cars. I definitely love my motorbikes. And at the age of 12, I got into cars in a big way. And I decided that I wanted to start saving for my first car, even though I couldn't like do my test until I was 17 years old. So there was a good period there. And I made
You're 12 and you're already saving up for your first car?
Yeah. I mean,
you're ahead of the game, brother. Where'd you learn that from?
It was just inside me. I made my dad take me to the bank and help me to open a second savings account. That was my car account. So that was the first step. And then I realized, well, I need some way of making some money. And fortunately, I had put my name down for paper rounds. And in the UK, you have to be 13 years old to do that. And I don't know how this happened, but on my 13th birthday, I got a random call from the newspaper saying, hey, we've had a round come available. Would you want it? I was like, absolutely. And then over the next 2 years, up to when I was 15, I just took on more and more paper rounds. So by the time I was 15, I had 5 of them, but I had essentially franchised them out to my friends. Because I had all the routes, they wanted to do it. So I essentially like, okay, I'll get everything ready for you. You go and deliver the papers and I take my bit and you take the lion's share. So with that little operation going on, I then went to work in the paper shop and started signing up new client accounts and stuff like this. And, by the time I was 17, I'd saved so much money that in the UK, it was, I don't know if you've ever seen Fast and Furious. It was like very much a boy racer thing. So I had my red Renault Clio with brand new alloys, and I had a fully kitted out stereo and neon lights, and it was awesome. But I had so much money left over that it funded my first set of traveling, which was backpacking around Europe when I was 18. So.
Wow. So by the time you're 18, you already had more entrepreneurial experience than some people get their whole life. I don't know what to say. So did you have a inspiration in your life that you modeled, or are you just wired differently? Tell me about this.
So my childhood hero was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, the ultimate entrepreneur.
Honestly, like, that's how I saw it. I was just amazed that this, young boy from a small Austrian town that no one's ever heard of had managed to, reach the pinnacle of bodybuilding and then go into the movies and, reach the pinnacle of that. And I never aspired to be like a champion bodybuilder or a world-class actor, but I just admired the man, and I do to this day, and admired the character. And I was very fortunate a couple of weeks ago, just before I went to Greece, Arnie's doing his book tour at the moment, and I bought 2 tickets to go and see him do his Q&A at the Royal Albert Hall. So I went to that and fulfilled a lifelong goal of sort of seeing him live. So.
Is his energy live the same as I'd imagine it would be? It's what was it like to see him live?
It was just incredible. I mean, I think I forget the exact age, but he's 76, 77 years old. He looked 20 years younger. He had the energy of someone 20 years younger. And quite frankly, I think he would have put a lot of the guys there in terms of like his energy levels. I think he would have, stood his own in many ways. Like it was just, what a man. Just so inspiring. So, so inspiring.
Love this. I skipped over something. We're going to slingshot back to it because I think it's interesting. So you save up this money, you're hustling, you're only 18 and you decide to go backpacking. You take that money and you go on a traveling and a journey on a backpacking trip. Why is that what you did? Why was that of interest in the first place?
I've always had this great, very deep sense of curiosity and this sense of, I suppose, adventure, really. And it's not even almost, I've had a very strong rebellious streak to me as well. So I wanted to drop out of it's college here, so I believe it's like senior senior year in the US. Mm. And my dad convinced me to stay in. But the compromise was I had my last exam. It was 4 p.m. on a Tuesday, and by 9 a.m. on the Wednesday, I was literally drinking coffee in Paris. Like I had everything lined up, and I just had to get out and spread my own wings. I grew up in a town that it's about 30 miles sort of west of London, and it was an old market town that had grown as London has grown. So it was quite of a small town feel to it, and I just hated it. And I remember just before going away, I'd gone out for a drink with my mum and dad, and we were sitting in the local pub, and like they just couldn't get their head around why I would do such a thing, and no one had ever really done that in the family. And I just said to them, I was like, I just don't want to I don't want to be here in 20 years time looking back thinking I wish I had done that, or doing the same things that I was doing now. And my dad said, see that guy standing over there at the bar? But yeah, he said, I remember seeing him in here drinking when me and your mum were dating. Right. I kid you not. And I was like, my point exactly. And I think that was the moment when my parents got it. They were like, oh, okay, you don't want to, you know, that's not the lifestyle for you. So yeah.
You don't want to be that guy sitting at the bar 20 years later talking about what if, and what if I did this. You went out and you grabbed it when you could.
Yeah, and I just want to say I've got nothing against that, and I'm not saying that in any disrespectful way, because fair. I fully appreciate everybody has their own choices. And, you know, if that guy was very happy, like hats off to him, like all the best. But I've just had this kind of like sense that the world is so big and there's so many people and there's so many things you don't know. I would hate to miss out on that. And kind of like, I want to do everything. I just want to do everything. And yeah, obviously that's not possible, but.
Thank you for touching on that nuance. It's earlier today, I did a podcast interview and they asked me, why should the listener listen to you? And it stumped me for a second because I'm like, I'm not quite sure they should yet. They might be fine where they are. I'm not going to tell them how to live their life. I'd have to look at the circumstance that's led them to where they are. So again, yeah, it's not to shame or blame. Really, we're just putting content out for the person that wants to latch onto it and run with it. I'm wondering, so you latch onto the idea that you're going to go out and you're going to go backpacking. You can go as deep or breeze over it. I'm just curious, like, what you learned from that trip. I mean, you're very much into childhood education now. We know that the youth is our future, and you're a very young adult and you go on this big experiment of sorts. Well, what did you learn from it all?
Oh, man, I learned a lot. The first thing I learned that really sticks out was that I created this itinerary for my trip, and I had done a lot of research, like loved doing that research, reading about all the different towns and cities and small villages across Europe. And I'm really into my history, so I was tying it in with old sort of like World War, you know, sort of sites that major events happened. And I had this amazing plan. And it was spread across 12 countries. Wow. And I had, in Europe, you have something called an Interrail ticket. So basically it's an unlimited train ticket and you can just jump on and off as many times as you like over a period of time. So it's like 30 day periods. And so I had this amazing trip planned out and I got going, but I was so excited to be out in Europe and to be seeing this, that this whole trip, like I had planned, I ended up doing in a month. And so I can remember very vividly standing at Rome, the train station in Rome. And by pure coincidence, Simon and Garfunkel had been doing their world tour and they had finished in Rome and they had, it was completely free and they were playing outside the Colosseum and they had lit the Colosseum up in all these different colors. And I'd met some cool people. So we were sitting out there with, you know, wine and baguettes and cheese and all of that sort of like, yeah, like romantic Europe stuff, I guess. And it was awesome. But I remember standing at the Rome train station with my ticket in hand, thinking, well, my plan is done now. What do I do? Because I've got all this time left.
Yeah.
And that was when my trip started. It was right there, because I was looking at all of the different trains coming in and going out. And I was like, well, do I go to Switzerland? Do I go to Austria? Like, it was so like bizarre. But I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to go to Switzerland. And I arrived in Switzerland and I tried to get a hostel for the night. And the lady in the tourism office laughed at me. I'm like, well, why are you laughing at me? She's like, don't you know what's happening? I was like, no. And it turns out it's sort of Europe's biggest dance festival was happening that weekend. So I ended up camping by one of the lakes with all of these Swiss and Germans and French in there, kitted out VW campers with neon lights, and the experience just went on and on like that. And I probably could have planned it, but I certainly didn't. But that really taught me a lot about sometimes you just have to let go and trust life and trust where life takes you. And it's never left me, and it's actually served me extremely well as I've sort of navigated and got older.
I'm wondering how that served you in business. So I'm thinking, even for example, you buy and sell a business, something could theoretically look good on paper, but then when you go and you experience the business, how things are running, you're like, this actually looks way better in paper. And it's what has that curiosity and willingness to just kind of accept the moment and pivot with what works best. Like, is that something you've done in your career, or am I making a connection that maybe doesn't exist?
No, you've absolutely got the connection. And I would actually take it a step further. It's not even something that I've done in my career. It's a way of living. I have developed such a deep intrinsic trust with my instincts and my intuition, because alongside this, I've been journaling, and I've actually just taken them out of my office, but my parents' home has just been sold, and I've had to take my stuff out of the attic, and I've got 20 years of journals there that I've started to put into chronological order, and I'm planning to read them and to sort of build all the notes. But what that has done is it's given me a very, very deep trust and sort of sense. And so for me, it's almost I'm in the state of having like constantly completely letting go and just trusting where my instincts and intuition is going, because I've got 20 years, literally 20 years of proof that not once has it ever let me down. And in fact, there's been so many occasions where when all of the logic is saying, no, don't go that way, but like my instincts say, no, go this way. And you develop that level of trust that you follow them, and everybody thinks you're mad, but as it works out, it was the right call. And it's just crazy. So yeah, it's a way of living, and it served me very well in my business life. And in fact, my business life probably took off as I started to fully integrate that way of living.
I'm wondering, and this is personal to me, so I'm assuming some of the listeners might feel the same way, that fear has driven a lot of my decisions in life. I'll just be honest. And that sounds terrifying to me. Imposter syndrome, anxiety, things like that. Are you never terrified in scenarios where you're making decisions and you're logically like you're trusting your intuition, but like, is it not terrifying?
Yeah. There are times when it is, particularly when the stakes are high, and certainly, yeah, I mean, Spectacular Group, my children's education group, has grown quickly, and the stakes are getting bigger and bigger by the day. And, you know, we had an occasion earlier this year when we had quite a lot of money owed to us that bizarrely, for all these really crazy reasons, just wasn't coming in. And it put us in a situation where we wasn't going to make payroll. And my finance director literally tearing her hair out, saying, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? But I just instinctively knew that would be okay. And so I wasn't worrying about it, which made her even more panicky. But as it happened, the day before payroll, we get some random check arrive through the post, which I was sort of saying to the finance guy, Liam, I was like, he's like, what should I do? I'm like, bank it, like, check it, put it in the bank. And it just happened. Yeah, so there is fear. There's definitely fear around it. A lot of the surface level fear has gone now because I've just developed that level of trust. But when the stakes get higher, that's when it's, you still have to sort of stop and check yourself and be like, is this the right call?
I love that. And I love your optimism. I definitely know what it feels like when you're being optimistic and everyone thinks the world's burning around them and it's a perspective's huge. What about those moments, though, that it doesn't go as planned? Any examples where, so optimism is a good thing. It's good to have a plan B, but you want to be optimistic. You want to have a good perception of what's going to come. But have you ever been entirely wrong? And what did you do in those scenarios where it just like, you made a wrong move, things were out of your control? What did you do in those disaster? Give me a disaster scenario on what you did in it.
So the first thing to say is I don't necessarily believe in right or wrong. I just believe things are like it just is, and it's experience. And
expand like on that
experience.
Expand on that.
I truly wholeheartedly believe that when things on the surface go wrong, there's actually a bigger opportunity in there. And the trick is to look for that opportunity and then to turn it to your advantage. So when things are going wrong, I'm using that label, I'm starting to get excited because I'm like, okay, there's an opportunity for essentially like making a leapfrog move here. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it looks like, but experience to show me that would be the case. And when things are going well, I'm like, okay, well, things are going well, but probably not too much of an opportunity to like leapfrog. And that's just like my mindset, but had it a number of times. And, you know, with my last acquisition, this has very much been the case where like my instincts are telling me and were telling me like, you have to do this. You have to like go with this business, even though the logic and there's, you know, on the surface, there's some sort of reasons why you shouldn't. And it's been an absolute nightmare. Like it's been an absolute nightmare almost from day one. Well, within 24 hours of signing, that's when the first problems started and they haven't really stopped.
Wow.
But what I can see now with hindsight is that it's actually served as a vehicle for a fairly like big like metamorphosis for myself, really. Like it's there's been a lot of pain in this last year, and it's caused me to stop and reevaluate priorities and direction that I'm sort of aware of that was like what was happening at the time, but it's still really painful. But you just have to keep going. But it's sort of served as a real inflection point. And had I not acquired this company and gone through the pain, that I'm very confident that inflection point wouldn't have happened. But I feel like in 20 years, I'll look back and look at that acquisition as probably being one of the best because of the path it took me down. So
interesting.
I hope that makes sense. It's a little bit like...
To oversimplify then, so pain in itself isn't good or bad in itself. Either it's what you make from the pain and the experience.
Absolutely.
What other pains? It's just on my mind. Any other? I learn a lot from failure, and it's funny. This is me just rambling for a second, Adrian. You can teach someone something, but it often isn't until I actually do something wrong that I truly learn my lesson. Is there any scenarios like that where you thought you had the answer and any additional scenarios that you really had to learn a lesson?
Yeah, I mean, I'll continue the backpacking story because there was big twists. So I came back from traveling Europe and life was fantastic and had the most amazing time. I'd already done a lot of stuff at before sort of turning 19. I came back from that and everything came together. So I'd been chasing a girl for about 18 months and she wouldn't be my girlfriend. And I came back and all of a sudden we were an item and that was brilliant. And I started my new job. But within a year of coming back from that, I went through a fairly significant nervous breakdown and it really tore me down. And I couldn't understand it because less than 12 months ago, I was, you know, driving around in my really cool car and I'd just been backpacking around Europe and life was pretty cool. And all of a sudden I was so low, like my confidence and everything had been so completely wiped that, I couldn't look people in the eye. I barely left the house. I was just at complete rock bottom and I didn't understand what was happening. And I went to the doctors and purely actually to get some sleeping tablets because I wasn't sleeping. I was had insomnia. And she said, you know, you've had a nervous breakdown. And I was so shocked to hear it, but I was also so numb as well that it didn't really register. And I can just remember somehow like just getting myself home and sitting on my bed in my parents' house. And I had all of this medication in my left hand and it was almost like a bit like a Matrix moment, like red pill or blue pill. And I can just remember looking at it thinking, like the medication, thinking this is not the path for me. And I remember consciously acknowledging that, choosing not to take the medication to go down that organic route was going to be a longer path. It's going to be a harder path, but it was the right path for me personally. And it would be a case of rebuilding myself brick by brick. And that's exactly what happened. But it took me the best part of my 20s. Like it took me a decade to build myself back up. I had 12 failed startups during that period. A number of personal inner demons I had to address, addictions, alcoholism, there was a huge amount of pain, which again I see now is like the precursor to what's been a pretty fun 30s so far. So
I want to get into the minutia here because I think it's so powerful. So you have the pills, the prescription, and it will numb some of the symptoms, but it's not going to solve the root issue. And it sounds like you spent the better part of your 20s trying to rewire and solve that root issue. What did that look like? So you put the pills down. You said, I'm going to do this organic way, even if it's difficult. What was your next move? Do you go for a run? Do you set your alarm? Like, what was one of the first few, one or two or few actions you started to take to naturally kind of rewire something that was physiologically wrong in your brain?
Well, I don't know whether it's natural or not, but I think my next move was probably having a massive joint of marijuana. Like at the time, if I'm honest, like that was the space I was in. I was numbing myself through marijuana. And I ended up leaving the job that I was doing. So I was an apprentice bricklayer. Yeah. And I decided to go to university because my girlfriend, who I chased for a long time, and then we were together and she was going to uni and I was pretty down about that. So I was like, I'm going to go to uni as well. And then we ended up going to the same uni and we broke up in like the first 3 weeks. It's like crazy. So I started going down a different path in terms of my career, but I was struggling because this depression and everything that came with this nervous breakdown wasn't going anywhere. But what I started to get to the root to in a very slow and painful way, if I'm honest, was that fundamentally a big part of this was an identity crisis. Like people talk about midlife crisis, like having a midlife crisis, but I really fundamentally believe that there is a, you know, an identity crisis that many people go through in their late teens and sort of into their 20s. And I can remember, like, my younger sister, all she ever wanted to be was a hairdresser. Like, all she ever wanted to be, there was never anything else, it was a hairdresser. And I can just remember thinking how lucky she was to know that, like, how lucky. And I didn't know, and I sensed that there was a lot I wanted to do. I sensed that there was a lot of contribution I wanted to make, but I really didn't know where, like, where and what. And so the solution was to smoke a lot and to drink a lot. And I suppose university gave that environment in which it was socially acceptable, if not encouraged.
My story is so similar. And the listeners probably heard it before, but I joke that I knew where my North Star was. I could see it, but I was running backwards. And things like smoking and drinking and porn and overeating, I knew the answer, but I wasn't living in alignment with what the answer is. And I think it was such a great lesson in my life personally, because there's darkness and there's light. And I had to see the darkness to really start to appreciate when I started to move closer and closer to that light, closer and closer to that North Star. So at some point, and I've got nothing against smoking or drinking or any of that stuff, especially in moderation, but at some point you must have thought the way I'm living isn't working the best. Did you have a specific moment? And then what did you start to do? What did you start to do to kind of re-identify yourself, create a new identity for yourself, and start moving closer to what you probably even intuitively knew was the path to take? I know that's a huge question. We could do like a 10-hour segment on just this, brother.
No, it's really great, because it actually segues into like the path or the paths that it got me on today. So I started university, but I, true to form, dropped out after 3 weeks. And my reasoning was, it was very quick. I was looking around and I was like, I'm not going to spend my career doing this. Studying construction management. And what I understand now in hindsight was that I've always had this strong urge to build. And at first I thought that bricks was my tools, and then I thought construction management, so I'd help, you know, manage to, but neither of that was right. So I dropped out of university, but within those 3 weeks, I'd started a business, a student business, and this was just before Facebook. And so my sort of great idea was to go to all of the student nights, take loads of photos of everybody having a good time, then to upload them to a website, to be handing out business cards with like the web address to people as you're taking the photos. So then the next day, the first thing people do is they want to go and see the photos from the night before. But at the same time, then going to local businesses saying, hey, if you want to reach the student market, we're getting like 1,000 or whatever hits on this on a, you know, weekly or whatever basis. This is how much it's going to cost. And got quite a few signups from that. And then that evolved. So that then evolved into, as well as doing this advertising, we started running student nights. And so we had the one night, and then had a second night, and then a third night, and then a fourth night. And then all of a sudden, you're like life and center of the party. You've got all of the free tickets. You're being given crates of alcohol by the club owners to try and entice people in, which we had most of it, and was making really good money. So I ended up staying for 3 years at university with all of my friends, but I wasn't actually studying. But that reached a point where I was starting to get into my personal development at this point, and I like the idea of, say, getting up at 6 o'clock and going for a run, but we're still passing at 5 o'clock. And so there was this massive conflict. And so one of the things I'd done to like get me out of that was that I signed up for a half marathon. And that was the starting point. Like, people see what I'm doing now, but I always like jump to the point and say, hey, look, it started with a half marathon, and that's really where it started. And I just never would have believed it, you know, that would have taken me to some of the places I've been, you know, as we sit here talking. But
it's when you signed up for, it's amazing. I mumbled that. I want to just slow down and say that's amazing. When you signed up for that half marathon, were you prepared physically for it, or was that a way larger leap than you had ever imagined?
I was smoking like a trooper. Normal cigarette. Well, I say it's normal. They were like the roll-up cigarettes that we can afford as students. And smoking like a trooper, and sort of the weed and marijuana. I was drinking like a fish because we could. you know, had the best excuse. We're running four student nights and they were like the nights to go to. So I was in a terrible shape, really. But I knew that. So, but I like the idea. I've always liked my fitness. So I started doing a bit of training, nowhere near what I should have been doing, but I started getting out there and training, and I ended up getting a fairly good time for the half marathon, considering I hadn't like fully invested in the training side. And that started, like, I've learned a very big lesson from this, journey, because that started a series of, you know, as I crossed the finish line of the half marathon, I'm like, oh, I really enjoyed that. It then sparked the curiosity of, I think I could do a marathon. You know, as you go to one horizon, the next one opens up. And so having done the half marathon, I thought, wow, you know, I didn't really properly train for that. And I got an okay time, far better than I thought it would be. Certainly not top of the pack, but I'm pretty proud of myself. I think I could do the London Marathon. So I had the same experience where I thought, well, I'm going to train for this. Didn't really train for it. Still like living the lifestyle, but went to it and I was a little bit healthier, and done the London Marathon and had a great time. And I was like, oh yeah, I think I could do a triathlon. I'm going to look for a triathlon. And I ended up signing up for the London Triathlon, like the Olympic distance, which felt like a stretch, but it wasn't like stupid distances. And so I'd done the London Triathlon, and after finishing that, I remember my parents came up, my mates came up. My mates obviously, you know, met me in the bar after, so we started drinking, and I got a good time. I thought I'd do it in about 4 hours, and I ended up doing it in like 2 hours 45 or something. And when I was cycling back to Waterloo train station, which was like the other side of London, I was meeting my parents over there. We was all getting the train back home. I remember standing up there, like looking over London and just having this idea that I think I could do an Ironman. Like, I think I could do an Ironman. And I just kind of like parked it, and like I kept that idea there. And then it was about 3 or so years later when, again, my life had just got completely out of balance. I was a terrible failure, having failed, I think it was like my 6th or 7th startup, and I was consuming a lot of alcohol and other types of drugs to essentially numb the pain. And then I just sort of snapped out of it. And the way I didn't snap out of it, but I signed up to the Ironman thinking, if anything's going to snap me out of this, it's going to be
you force yourself. This. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just kind of went from there. So,
so you've got big vision. You accomplish big things. Let's talk to the person. And I've been this person who's like, I can barely even do a 12-minute mile on the treadmill at the gym. The concept of signing up for a half marathon and leading to an Ironman feels so darn far away, and I can just envision it, but there's going to be work that's required to get me there. Talk to the person who's like struggling to do a 12-minute mile on the treadmill at the gym. Like, where should they start? And whether it's mindset or actions, you tell me, what should they do?
I mean, you have to start where you are. And I know that's a very simplistic like answer, but it's true. So if you're struggling to do that, that's absolutely okay. Like, that's fine. And you don't want to go and sign up straight for an Ironman, just as I didn't. You know, it was setting that stretch goal. And then, you know, starting to put a bit of structure in place. Like, I always say that for most people, the best thing they can actually do for themselves is to start and create some space and some bandwidth. Like, most people's lives are wake up straight out of bed, on the phone, into work mode, into mum or dad mode, and they don't really have the time and space for them. And so just by creating a little bit of space, you can then start to be like, okay, if I'm going to do this half marathon, then I should be running 3 times a week, as an example. And this is how I want to do it, and start to plan that out. And then you may not even start fully running. You may just start walking, and then it may be like a minute of walking, a minute of running, a minute of walking, but you do that for 20 minutes. And it's just like step by step by step. And what people, I think, don't fully appreciate is that as you do that, you become a higher version, a higher, like a different person, essentially. So the person who started with, like, I'm just going to walk for 20 minutes is a different person to, after, you know, 2 months of training, is now running for 20 minutes, even at like a moderate pace. It's a different person. And so you're in a different mindset as that, like, latter person. And you just have to give yourself the runway and the bandwidth to become that, rather than putting all of this pressure and negative criticism of why you can't do it. Like, you can do it. You just got to give yourself a space to do it.
Give yourself, like, the space.
Yeah.
And I like how you mentioned become that. One of my least favorite terms is fake it until you make it. Mm-hmm. I prefer, I say, be it until you become it. And faking it, I don't want to fake that I'm a runner if I'm not a runner. But if I want to be a runner, I need to start doing the things that a runner does. Mm. I'm wondering, because I know you talk a lot, your Instagram's great, and you talk a lot about habits and morning routines and different topics like that. How has your kind of like habits and morning routines changed over time? Again, let's say you're looking to run, maybe you just start with that 20-minute walk in the morning, but then over time, before you know it, you're running an Ironman. So, like, how has your specific habits and routines kind of changed over time?
I mean, they've changed wildly. So, and this is what got me onto this. It's not onto this path. I was already on the path in terms of, like, the understand, like, living this, but it deepened my appreciation for how important, you know, this is in terms of, like, creating new space. So 2 years ago, I was waking up at like 2:30, 3 in the morning, having extreme anxiety and panic attacks.
Oh, wow.
To the point where I'd be laying in bed, like in the fetus position, like completely curled up for an hour and a half, 2 hours, in a state of utter dread, like utter dread that the world was like coming in on me. And it would take me like literally like an hour and a half, 2 hours to sort of talk myself out of it and almost come out of, oh, like, yeah, it's okay. Like, you're okay. But that situation, like, wasn't okay, and I knew it needed to be addressed. And so I went to see a therapist, and who helped me with this incredibly. And what I realized was that the way he described it was like, imagine your life is a car, and you've got one of the wheels is your work, one of the wheels is like family and relationships, another one is fun and social side, and the other one is health and fitness. Is like your car, your work tire is completely overinflated to the point it's about to explode, and the other three are like flat. It's like, this is why you're having these experiences, and it's going to be a question of, we need to take some air out of the work and we need to pump up the others. And so that started a journey for me where the only way I could really do this was, rather than waking up early and going straight to my emails, I've started by waking up early and having the first half an hour for me. Like, I'll sit downstairs, have a cup of tea because I'm British and I like my tea. And then maybe go out for a walk with my dog or read a book. And in a very short period, I started to notice that I was not only feeling better, I could feel myself becoming a slightly different version of me. And it was so noticeable to me, not necessarily to everyone else, but to me, that I was like, you know what, this is actually worth me getting up a little bit earlier, because I want to use that time in other, like, you know, I want to do more of that time. So I started getting up an hour earlier. And so I'd be like doing my reading and going for a little walk, a little exercise, and just having some time for me. And again, like, I started to feel a different and better version of me. But also I started to notice that these positive changes were going on around, like, my work and my family life and in other areas. And I could all of a sudden start seeing things that just a little bit more clearer. And so I was like, this is great. Like, what if I got up a little bit earlier again? And on it went. And so now this has become so integral and important to me, because I recognize how valuable this is, that right now I get up at 4 a.m. every single morning, and the first 3 hours of the day are 100% focused on me. And I say that with all glorious, like, selfishness, because what would happen is, if I didn't do that, I would be waking up and I'd be like a level 2, level 3 version of myself. and I'd be going into my day and I'd be like a level two, level three version as a dad, level two, level three version as an employer and business owner, et cetera, et cetera. But instead I'm focusing the first like 3 hours on me, and then I'm going into my day and all of a sudden I'm like a level seven or level eight dad or level seven or level eight business owner. And it's having very tangible, impact. Like, this is when my career buying and selling businesses completely took off with this as like the precursor. So
3 hours. It doesn't have to be 3 hours. I can imagine it could be 30 minutes and it's better than no time at all. But 3 hours is that's a large block. Is it fair to assume you're very intentional with what you do in those 3 hours?
Yeah, really intentional.
Talk a little bit about what those 3 hours look like then.
Yeah, so it starts the night before. So I get my gym kit out, put it on the floor. And I always say, look, it's like, I think people think, oh, it's going to be like perfectly neat. Like, it's not, like, it's thrown on the floor. My shorts, my smelly socks and all that stuff. And and I'm getting ready for bed. But I go to bed genuinely excited about waking up at that time and doing this because it's the best part of my day every single day.
Wow.
So I wake up and I'm fumbling around in the dark and I'm trying not to wake up my wife. And quite often I've, ended up getting to the gym and my shorts are on back to front and my t-shirt. Like, it happens quite a lot. But I get my gym stuff on. I go downstairs. I say hello to my dog and my cat. I make a cup of tea and then I read 10 pages of the book. And that in itself, that reading 10 pages, that over the last 18 months, I finished a book 2 days ago, and I think that was my 33rd or 34th book. Like, it's sort of crazy, like just 10 pages a day, never any more and certainly never any less. So I read my 10 pages, I then meditate for 15 minutes. I spend 5 minutes getting myself into a state of like visualizing, but I call it like sort of grateful visualization. So I'm looking at what I want, but I'm really focusing on feeling an immense sense of gratitude for being that or having that or doing that, whatever that thing is. And then I normally go to the gym and I work out. And like on my way to the gym, I've got like these 10-minute podcasts I listen to that are quite motivational and put myself into the right mindset. And I do my workout and then I come back and I'm normally back like getting in at 7 o'clock. And by this point, my daughter is either getting up or has got up and I'm just a completely different person. And just the final bit, like sort of point on this without sort of going on for too long, but I also want to say that I still wake up and I can feel like the inner demons, or I can feel that, a sense of anxiety or something. I had it this morning. I woke up and I was like, I'm feeling anxious and stuff like that. But those 3 hours by the end of that, it's not about like what it gives me. It's more about what it takes away. So it took away that anxiety. It took away that nervousness energy and just made me feel, yeah, you've got this. No matter what happens today, like, you'll figure it out. So
you feel more confident, you feel like a winner, you've held yourself accountable, and then it just makes sense that the rest of the day goes fantastic, even if it started off a little rough because you went through this routine and you got some wins in.
They don't, I mean, the days don't always go fantastic. That's just it. Yeah. Like, this year has been the hardest year of my life. There's been so much pain happened this year, but I would have been lost without that morning process, that morning routine. And so even when the days are bad, like, they're not as bad. Again, I say bad, like, sort of, like, it just is. Like, they just are, if they're challenging, like, it just is what it is. But I feel far more equipped to handle them and to turn them into an advantage. And the final point on this is that it gives you certainly gives me a much heightened sense of clarity, so I can see things more clearly, but then I've got the confidence to follow through on what needs to be done. So whether it's having a hard conversation or doing whatever, I feel more capable of doing that.
We all go through pain. I'm sorry, it's been a tough year. We can run a little long if you're open to it. I'm wondering why has this year been so everything in terms of your health and your mindset, and like you're doing everything right, but you're still having a tough year. Like what's happening that's making this year difficult?
Well, I'll say outright that this year has been, it's been a blessing in the sense of it's been one very long baptism of fire that has, where the fire has just got more intense, and it just kept going. So it really started back in April, where the latest acquisition I'd done, it was a real turnaround, this business. Like, it was a risk taking it on. I knew it was a risk. I structured the deal in a way so that I wasn't personally at risk, but I was given this everything because I really wanted to make the business work. And I thought we'd caught it just in time, but then in April it started to go sour. And yeah, it started with one client of paying late, and it had this domino effect that got worse and worse, and I ended up having to get rid of the business, and there has been a lot of fallout from that. On top of that, my wife and I, we got married at the end of July. That's not the worst. Like, I'll say that's a worst thing that's happened. But unfortunately, her mother, so my mother-in-law, passed away a few weeks before the wedding. Then the week of the wedding, my younger sister gave me a call to tell me she had breast cancer. We'd also had a few more close, it was literally like within 2 week period, there was four people very close to us, one of them being my sister, diagnosed with cancer. One of them was quite bad, like really bad, as well. Thankfully, like, he's still here. The day I was talking about this morning, actually, so the day before the wedding, I had my best man coming to me. I was just about to pick up suits, but I had a former employee who's, say, part of the fallout. He had managed to hack into our IT systems and deleted everything. So there I am, like the tailor's calling, saying, "Where are you?" And I'm desperately trying to get the IT systems back up. And then, yeah, I mean, the acquisition side just got sort of worse and worse, really. And it got to the point where, like, it was just getting so surreal. It was like, this cannot be happening. I had one of the team members step out of the van and broke his ankle. The next day, getting a call saying the van had been seized by the police. And we're like, this is just insane. But it served as a, like I said, like a real metamorphosis. So that experience and all of the stuff that happened within that, because I've really just glossed the surface there, it's made me to start and question, like, what was my priorities and what was I actually doing? Like, what was the goal here, and what was my role in the accomplishment of that goal? And it has taken me down a slightly different direction. So with the children's education group, I was really enjoying having a more active role in there, but I made the decision that I was going to be completely out of the day-to-day. And so I've in the process of just transitioning in a very experienced management team. There's already a management team there, but something that basically someone who would really run the show and would completely free me up to be able to still grow that group, but from a distance while I do other things.
So this might be a difficult question, but I'm sure intuitively you kind of have a feel for where it's going to go. 10 years down the road, when you look back at this year, what story do you feel like you're going to be telling 10 years down the road? When you look back at 2023, What story are you going to tell?
This year I know it's like this year has served as a major turning point in my personal journey. And I sense there will be a few more like over the course of my, like as there is with everyone really, like with my lifetime. But I could see the path. So this summer, I could very clearly see the path I was going down with essentially building this empire with children's education. Like we've grown very quickly, multi-million revenue. We currently educate 10,000 under 5 year olds every academic term, and we've barely scratched the surface. But I could see that where that would lead me personally and the type of person I would need to become to be able to fulfill that, and what implications that would have on my family life and my health and everything else that was important to me. And it wasn't a path I was prepared to walk down. So I think looking back, I will recognize that with the, you know, the benefit of hindsight, and see that, yeah, you know, I feel like I like instinctively have made the right decisions in terms of doing a slight step change in my approach to stuff while still fulfilling like the mission of the children's group. So
powerful. And down the road, I want to look back and know that even if it's the smallest pebble creating the tiniest ripple, I want to play a part in your growth and success. I want to be an advocate and cheerleader for what you're doing. And I'm sure the listener, like me, wants to help you as well. How can we continue to support you, get more of you, be an advocate for all you're doing, Adrian?
Oh, thank you so much. Really heartwarming. So I'm very active on social media. I love connecting with people on social media. It's always great when people follow and they reach out and they want to share their story or what's going on. And I truly love to hear that. And if there's any value I can add, great. And if it's just being someone who listened, then great as well. So following on social media is always great. My handle is Adrian J. Knight. That's Knight with a K. That's the same for all of them: Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm very active on Instagram. I do a lot there, and I'm always pleased to speak to people. My personal website is adrianknight.co.uk. There's a bit more about me on there. And yeah, again, I just love to connect to people.
I encourage people to connect. I'm going to continue to follow you. Hearing a little deeper about your journey is mesmerizing. I'm curious to continue to listen in and see what kind of summit you're going to scale next, man, because it's been a rough year, but I'm an advocate for what you're doing, and I appreciate you taking the time to share some wisdom on the show, man. It's been fun.
Honestly, thank you so much for having me. It's a great show, man. It really is. And I'm just honored to be here.
Talk to you soon, brother.